Ladies and gentlemen, it's Parsons and Naylor's Christmas pull-out section. Hello, I'm Henry Naylor.
And I'm Andy Parsons. It's 12:30 on Christmas Day. You're bound to have one person in the room with you who's annoying the hell out of you. It's no different for us. Would you please welcome him, Richie Webb.
Christmas.
You're probably all cooking your lunches now, wearing an ill-fitting jumper that wouldn't look out of place in the dictionary corner of Countdown. So that you don't muck up your lunch, we'll give you some handy reminders as we go. It's just gone 12:30, so now...
make the bread sauce.
So what's happened so far today? Well, you'll have woken up this morning and looked for the stocking at the end of your bed and were gutted to realise that your parents feel you are too old for that sort of thing, which is probably not unreasonable given that they are pushing 80.
Your mum never drinks, except on Christmas Day, when for some reason at 9:30 in the morning she starts hoovering sherry like a wino on a park bench. And unless you make a conscious effort, this is what is going to happen to you for the rest of the day.
At 1 p.m. you sit down to your Christmas meal with at least one lot of meat that could have done with being cooked for a little longer, and one lot of veg that could have done with a little shorter.
You then pull the crackers, but manage to only get the end of a cracker in both hands and no presents. You then argue about which present should have been yours, which is pointless, as you've already got a plastic wedding ring. And you don't need a pack of cards which would be too small for a hobbit.
You then put on a party hat somewhat self-consciously and get depressed as you realise you have a fat head. Because you've bust your party hat.
Your mum finds this hysterical as she tucks into her fourth bottle of port.
2 p.m. you're stuffed as an endangered species in a Victorian museum. You all sit in the front room and struggle with indigestion. Older members of the family apologise for excessive muscle relaxation. You read out what is on telly. There is a Morecambe and Wise repeat, a Bond film, a celebrity version of a disappointing quiz show, a celebrity version of a disappointing gardening show, a punter version of a disappointing celebrity show, and a John Wayne film that is somewhat racist.
2:45. Someone mentions washing up, and everybody tries to hide in the toilet.
3 o'clock. Everybody volunteers to do the washing up instead of watching the Queen's speech. However, you don't actually do any washing up. You just put lots of water in the pots and pans and say, I've left them to soak.
3:15. You decide to go for a walk because you feel bloated. 3:17, it gets dark. So you decide that's enough walking for the day. 3:18, your mum passes out.
News review.
Well, another year bites the dust. Let's have a look back at some of the highlights of 2003.
January. Despite telling us Saddam was armed with truckloads of the most deadly weapons known to mankind, Bush and Blair predict a quick war with few casualties. They were right. Unfortunately, the peace is longer with much higher casualties.
NHS patients are to be sent abroad for operations, which slashes the waiting lists at our hospitals. But the waiting lists at our airports are massive.
February. Troops are assembling in the Gulf, ready for action. Ian Duncan Smith pays a visit. This is so as they all know what a doomed leader looks like. The Defence Secretary, Jeff Hoon, goes on a skiing holiday.
Blair and Bush privately debate how Iraq will be governed after the war. We now know that they agreed on badly.
March. The war on Iraq starts. Coalition troops experienced stiffer resistance than expected. Donald Rumsfeld admits the war may take longer than he thought. Jeff Hoon is seen leafing through a Pontins brochure and saying Malaga looks nice this time of year.
May. Network rail losses amount to £290 million, proving that it was genuinely a not-for-profit company.
June. The real war begins. The one between the government and the BBC. The government accused the BBC of anti-war bias. They also blame Gandhi, Jesus and Santa for stoking up peace. August. Donald Rumsfeld makes a speech likening Iraq's situation to America's after the War of Independence. Jeff Hoon says it's been a tough decision, but it's got to be Centre Parks this year.
September. David Blaine came over to our shores to perform a spectacular magic trick where he turned a decent crowd of well-wishers throwing bouquets into a screaming rabble throwing omelette ingredients.
Of course, we do like to see Americans as more than just a bunch of self-absorbed, gun-toting idiots obsessed by celebrity and violence. And then they go and elect Arnie as governor of California. That would be like us electing Vinnie Jones as mayor of London. October. Paul McCartney's wife, Heather, gave birth to a baby girl. Though in a few years' time, he'll probably claim he did the whole thing himself.
November. Michael Howard becomes leader of the Conservative Party at an all-time low for Labour. Unfortunately, it's also an all-time low for the Conservatives. Labour used to be education, 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 and tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. Now they're crime, 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 and tough on education, tough on the causes of education.
December. And as the new year approaches, it's time to make a few resolutions. Unless you're the United Nations, in which case it doesn't matter if you make resolutions or not, because George Bush will ignore them anyway.
Television.
As well as the James Bond film and the slightly racist John Wayne film, every Christmas there's always the Agatha Christie film. Don't bother to watch it. Here it is, in a nutshell. And to help us with this sketch, please welcome our very special guest, Lucy Porter.
I am the detective. I am either a very old lady or a Belgian who has got a dodgy moustache and an even dodgier accent, which changes from scene to scene. Everywhere I go, there are always a couple of murders. And for some reason, I never fall under suspicion. I go on holiday where I meet.
Me, a lady with a frilly umbrella, a fan, and a hat which looks like a pheasant. I am either a young ninny, an old ninny, or Dame Maggie Smith. Whenever I speak to the detective, I'm guaranteed to look down my nose as though they've farted under my nostrils. Since they're either an old woman or a Belgian, this is highly likely. Suddenly, we find a dead body.
This happens every holiday. It doesn't matter if I've gone to the Nile, the Orient Express, or Venice. Lun Polly must be seriously thinking about blacklisting me.
I become hysterical. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Madame, this is the most serious crime imaginable. This is murder.
Murder? Thank you.
Shall we call the police?
No, I'd much rather you, some random bloke whom we're not sure is any good or not, conduct the investigation.
Thank you. And whereas the crime would be solved in 5 minutes using DNA evidence, I decide to ignore that process and just ask people a lot of questions.
I am the rakest male suspect who always plays tennis. Despite the fact I've obviously had a highly expensive education, I seem to have a basic inability to speak the Queen's English. Instead of saying, oh no, he's dead, I'll say, dash shame, the old boy bought it. What, oh, poor show, not bees, a jolly unwizard.
What were you doing at the time of the crime? Do you have a motive?
By Sally, I do believe I was engaged in horseplay in splendid japes over a raw clement cup of cocoa. I couldn't have possibly have done it, because it just wouldn't have been cricket, Wimbledon, strawberries and cream, polo or pims, what you say, rather, I say.
I am the token member of the clergy. I'm always an old vicar and never one of those trendy vicars who wears sandals and sings Kumbaya. Despite the fact there has never been a recorded instance of a murder by a vicar, it's usually me who did it.
I go away and I scratch my chin a lot. Then I find something innocuous like a pin. I say, but of course. Even if we're on the Nile, I somehow manage to gather the suspects in a drawing room. We recap what happened. Before we met, what were you doing, lady suspect?
I was covered in blood, holding the murder weapon, stood over the victim's corpse, shouting, die, heathen, die.
Bizarrely, it never turns out to be you who did it. It's either the person with no motive and a cast iron alibi who did it, or the second most famous actor in the cast. But whoever did it will just say, bravo. But you will never prove it.
Bravo. But you will never prove it.
Yeah. But I found this pin.
Damn you! I then say something like, gosho, what the vicar? No, I say, well, I fiddlesticks what?
It's only then the police turn up. I vow never to go anywhere exotic on holiday next year. Because after all, whoever heard of murder at Clacton-upon-Sea?
Society! Have you taken the sprouts off? Uh-oh.
Of course, Christmas is a time for games, and if you learn nothing else from this show, do not play Monopoly this Christmas, or as it should be called, Endless Arguments. First of all, you argue who's going to get the car and who's going to be left with the boot. Then you argue who's going to be banker because you're convinced whoever is the banker is going to nick half the money. Then you argue about whether there is a local rule about whether you should put your fines in the middle and then pick them up when you land on free parking. And that's before you've started. Then you move on to the big argument. Should you take the throw of the dice when it falls on the floor or rests on a slant against the community chess cards? And then you argue about buying and selling property because you think some insider dealing has gone on because Dad sells Mum Mayfair in exchange for the electricity company with a bit of nudge-nudge, wink-wink, see you in the bedroom later on. But all of these things pale into insignificance compared to the mother of all arguments. If somebody lands on your property and you don't see it, and then somebody else throws the dice, does the first person still have to pay you? I've seen people not speaking for days over that one. They say it's a game for all the family. Only if you hate your family. All that happens is that somebody gets sullen, somebody cries, somebody throws a tantrum, and somebody thinks they are the biggest financial wizard this country has ever seen. Although all they've got is £5,000 in paper money, their best mode of transport is a dog, and they won second prize in a beauty competition.
Bah, humbug.
Of course, if everybody seems far too jolly, you've heard jingle bells once too often and had enough of Christmas by the beginning of November, here are some ways to lower the mood. Get people to imagine if Jesus was born now in Bethlehem. There would be plenty of room at the inn because nobody would want to stay there. However, the manger would have been bulldozed, the donkey wouldn't be allowed through the checkpoints, and the wise men would go in completely the wrong direction because instead of following a star, they would mistakenly follow a Patriot missile. and arrive carrying gold, frankincense and an AK-47.
Suggest getting some nice red wine and ruining it by heating it up and sticking some bits of twig and a teabag in it.
And if all this fails, remind them that whatever they think of Christmas, New Year's Eve will be much worse. You'll be there at 5 to 12, not yet arrived where you want to be, not with the people you want to be with. You'll be crushed in a crowd. You'll not have had enough to drink, but you'll be desperate for a wee, and there'll be no toilet available. Enjoy.
But if you don't want to be a party pooper, maybe you need a party planner. And here's Britain's leading events organiser, Fran Matthews, who will give you some advice.
Hi, I'm Fran Matthews, and I've been rushed off my feet this festive season organising parties for the rich and famous. I'm the person to come to if you want a top do, so here are my Christmas and New Year do, don't do's and my do, 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 do. Of course, the most important thing to decide on is your theme. A Winter Wonderland theme is always popular, and that's what I decided to do for this year's Football Association party. The venue looked beautiful with lots of lovely fake snow, although, in hindsight, maybe surrounding all those footballers with heaps of white powder wasn't the best idea. It's also great fun to have some activities organised. I persuaded everyone to act out the nativity scene. Obviously, Sven and Nancy were Mary and Joseph. The child Messiah could only be Wayne Rooney. For the three wise men, we had Ali McCoy, Terry Venables and Big Ron Atkinson. David Seaman, he was the innkeeper. Well, he can't keep it out. And, of course, Martin Keown, he was the natural choice for the donkey. Of course, choice of menu is also a very important consideration, and the football lot were delighted when I announced that on offer that night would be fresh liver. George Best seemed particularly keen. But I also learnt a lot this year from organising the House of Commons Christmas do. Actually, Sherry, she gave me a sneak preview of Tony's present. Apparently, he'd asked for some weapons of mass destruction with the initials SH on them. But no matter how much he searches, Tony never will find them, because Sherry decided to buy him a defibrillator instead. Gordon Brown was very keen to help me organise the party. He wanted to make it special for Tony, insisted it'd be a great idea if we all hid in the darkness, and then when Tony came in, suddenly leapt out screaming, "Surprise!" Of course, I was hoping that George W was going to turn up, but apparently the UN were having their party on the same night and he wanted to gatecrash that, then refused to recognise it as a legitimate gathering. But that does bring me to my final tip. No matter what the occasion, it's always good to organise a special surprise guest, and that's exactly what I did for the House of Commons bash. I'll give you a clue. He's making a list, he's checking it twice, he's going to find out who's naughty or nice. That's right, Lord Hutton! See ya.
News. And relax the turkey.
The TV news on Christmas Day is always the same. Here's what really happens on the Christmas news.
Welcome to the news on every Christmas Day. The main points: the Queen went to church in the morning, the Queen did a speech, the Pope did a speech, a bloke in Northampton always over-decorates his house in Christmas lights. And a report from a bloke on a roof about whether it's officially a white Christmas just because the National Weather Centre got one flake of snow but no one else did. Good afternoon. I'm a newsreader you've never seen before because I'm the office junior and I couldn't get Christmas off. And I have an oddly shaped head. We now cut to our Queen Goes to Church correspondent, who is even more junior than me and has an even odder-shaped head. Barry, what's the latest?
The Queen went to church this morning.
And?
And she sang hymns and received flowers and stuff.
Thank you, Barry. The Queen also did her annual speech today, none of which anyone can remember 2 minutes later, because they never do. In fact, the only one we remember is the one when she said she had a horrible anus. We go over to our Queen Does Annual Speech correspondent, Barry.
Here is some of what she said and stuff.
Hello, subjects. Once again, this year, I will be attempting to appear like a normal person. Even though I am clearly a massively rich German woman with a crazy family. I am shot in close up, sitting in front of a Christmas tree. This is so you can't tell that my front room is the size of an aircraft hangar and made out of gold. I'll say something like, as we sit down to our traditional Christmas meal of swan with all the trimmings, I can't help thinking of some event from the past year. But this year, I'm clearly just thinking that Paul Burrell is a complete tosser. And then I end my speech by saying the word peace a lot. Peace, peace, peace. Peace to you all, except Paul Burrell, who can peace off.
Music. Christmas is, of course, a time for giving. Giving leaders of the Tory party the sack, that is. So let's spare a thought for God's forgotten man, a man who promised to lead his party to victory in the next election, but instead will be watching the next election on the telly in the Michael Heseltine home for people who never got to be Prime Minister. I am, of course, referring to IDS Ian Duncan Smith, the Argos version of William Hague. His festive season will be rather a bleak one.
I'm gonna be lonely this Christmas, lonely and cold, an MP only this Christmas, a shepherd with no fold. No one will phone me this Christmas, down the river I'm sold. Yes, I'll be lonely this Christmas, lonely and bold.
Satire at its best there. But what of the Tories' new leader, the delightful, the charismatic Michael Howard? What a great Prime Minister he'd make. Prime Minister of the undead, that is. Michael Howard doesn't celebrate Christmas, you know. Oh, no. His big celebrations tend to be at the end of October.
Oh, I wish it could be Halloween every day. As the vampires gurgle and the werewolves bark all day. Yes, I wish it could be Halloween every day. And if I'm elected, it will be.
Well, that's enough supernatural attacks on the Conservative Party. This is the BBC. We're into balance, so it's time to accuse Tony Blair of something. I know, he's a crazed madman who won't listen to anyone else. Except, of course, the unelected President of the United States. Take that, Ben Elton. Of course, though, our leader is a Christian gentleman, so this is a very special time of year for him. He'll be out carol singing, or Carol Kaplan throttling, with his family around him. Cherie singing When I'm 64 for no apparent reason. Ewan knocking back the snowballs like there's no tomorrow. It's a happy day for the Blairs. God bless them, one and all. Singing the traditional Christmas songs of John Lennon.
So this is Christmas, and what have I done? Gone to war with Iraq. That wasn't much fun. It'll be over by Christmas, George Bush has assured me. But he meant his career and my credibility. If we're lucky this Christmas, there will be a stalemate. And if we're not, Iraq will be a fundamentalist state. And so this is Christmas, another year down. I'm just keeping this seat warm for my friend Gordon Brown.
Thank you very much.
Living. If your kitchen's full of smoke, phone the takeaway.
We would like to wish you a very happy Christmas. Enjoy the rest of the day, even if it will almost certainly entail difficult social situations number 657, watching Christmas Day telly with your parents.
I'm the grown-up son. After Christmas lunch, I suggest we all sit down and watch the big movie on the telly. The Great Escape of the Spy Who Loved the Philosopher's Stone in the Temple of Doom on the Nile.
I am the mother. Because it's Christmas and I've been drinking sherry since 9:30 in the morning, it's my job to talk through all the good bits and whenever it gets exciting, to loudly offer cups of tea.
I am the father. Because it's Christmas, I don't give a monkeys. I just sit down with a large brandy, pretend I'm still listening, and shut my eyes.
I'm the granddad. Because it's Easter, I spend 20 minutes unwrapping a boiled sweet before giving it to the dog.
I tell everybody to be quiet. Shh, the film is starting.
What?
Oh, now, I know him. I've seen him in something before. Who is he?
He's the man who bangs the gong before the film starts. Now, he's the star.
Oh, now, I know him. He was in that film once. Oh, who is he, Roger?
Without opening my eyes, I say Mel Gibson and pray I'm right.
Oh, that's right.
It's half an hour in, and I've had to go over 5 major plot points, explain who 11 characters are, and give the dog the Heimlich manoeuvre.
Sorry about that. It's about this point that I squint at the screen, see a green monster chasing a man whose car's just turned into a submarine and say, is this the news?
Well, I'm glad to see this is a good, clean family film for Christmas.
Suddenly and without warning, there is the most gratuitous sex scene I have ever seen. I'd forgotten this was in it.
I blush and panic and gabble and start putting coasters under all the drinks for no real reason.
By coincidence, I've woken up for this. I tut and make disapproving noises. But I do begin to watch the movie with the eye nearest the family shut and the eye they can't see wide open.
The film gets back to the plot. And Mum, despite being intelligent, fails to understand the simplest of plot lines.
Now, is that man with the white cat and the base at the bottom of the sea a goodie or a baddie?
Nazis, all of them!
You just missed the best bit!
Oh, well, we can stop watching it now, then. I turn over to Celebrity Bargain Hunt.
I turn to the bottle in frustration. After 10 minutes of drinking sherry, I'm going, Mum, that antique dealer bloke with the orange face, is he a goodie or is he a baddie?
Parsons and Naylor's Christmas pull-out section starred Andy Parsons, Henry Naylor, Richard Webb and Lucy Porter. It was written by the cast, David Quantick, Roderick Crook, Suk Panu, Paul Carenza, Alan Stafford, Dan Tetzel and Paul Harrison. The broadcast assistant was Yolanta Zabuki and the producer was Katie Tyrrell. Did you get a record token for Christmas? Then why not spend it on the best of Parsons and Naylor? CD currently available from most record stores. Merry Christmas!